Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we are here on a Wednesday morning. Starting to get chilly here in the southeast, and we are happy about that. Today on Biz Rocket Radio, we're going to be talking to two executives in corporate America, and we're going to be learning a lot about some of the challenges that they've gone through, the experiences that they've had, and learn a little bit about what they've done to make themselves successful in their business. Our first guest is Aaron Hand, and Aaron is a human resource leader and talent management strategist. Got that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Good morning. Welcome in.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So, Aaron, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background. Kind of how did you get to where you are now, and what are you doing?
Sure. As you mentioned, I consider myself an HR leader and talent management strategist, and I'll describe what that is. I've been in the business of helping align people with business objectives for my entire career. And so what that means is I understand and partner with business leaders around where are we trying to go. And then the next question they ask is, how am I going to do that? Who's going to help me get there?
Right.
So it becomes about the people. So that's the talent management strategist part of my career.
And how did you get to where you are now? I mean, you came up through, you lived in Atlanta for a while?
I've been in Atlanta for, I'm actually a California native, but my friends would say I'm from the South now. So been here over 26 years and had a long career. And grew up with a company, and in the last 5 years have really focused on helping that company align their people with their strategy. We had competitive landscape changes, organizational changes, and an imperative was, how do we ensure we have the right people in critical roles to support the business? So the last 5 years has been just terrific and fun.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the differences in working with finding talent and the right people in the C-suite versus maybe a senior executive kind of a role or senior role.
Sure. You know, John, the first thing that comes to mind when you say difference is volume, a very small volume of people that you're talking to.
Right.
So as I mentioned, we had organizational changes. And in the last 3 years, we had four key positions reporting to the president that we needed to replace due to retirements and organizational changes and new positions being created. And I can tell you the reason I say volume is the president interviewed for those roles. He interviewed one candidate. So my job was to ensure that we talked to the right people, and it really, the question in my mind was fit.
Yeah.
It becomes less about experience when you're talking about that table and who sits at that table, but can the president and the team see that person working with them?
Yeah.
Do we share a vision, and do we share values?
Right.
And so my job was to assess that, so he talked to one person, and we nailed it. It was great.
All right. So what's the secret spice that you add? How do you find that? That was actually my very next question is how do you identify that right fit? Because you're right. At the C-suite level, or at least certainly senior exec level, there are a lot of the same kind of characteristics. People have the resume, but how do you identify the right person?
You know, it's in the conversation. So myself and my boss, who reported to the president, we took it upon ourselves to ensure that in partnership with executive search firms, in most cases, that we screened, you know, the experience, that's table stakes. We were looking for candidates that could talk about the cultures they came from, what they were looking for, understanding their values. So it was a lot of conversation with executives about, tell me about your style, your leadership, what do you value, those kind of questions. Less behavioral interviewing, you know, because at that point, what our customer, what the president was looking for, we understood was, is this person going to lean into this role And can I work with them? Do I see them as a partner with that shared vision?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how many people did you have to go through to find that one in this particular
case? Well, fortunately, we have great partners. So I felt like a critical role that I played was, if we're partnering with Executive Search, we have a mutual understanding, because we're extension, you know, the Executive Search is an extension of my team.
Right.
And so really describing the needs and what it was going to take to create that fit. Mm-hmm. And so in most cases, we interviewed, three or four people and nailed, got it down to that one.
Erin, what about the other side of the table? I mean, you're obviously trying to talk to the candidate and find out if they're a good fit. But before that happens, when you're talking to the executive, do they just kind of roll out and give you like, hey, here's a list of exactly what I'm looking for? Or is there kind of a process in helping them figure out the person, the culture, the values that they're really trying to go find?
That's a great question, Andy. A lot of times what happens is, as they start going through the process, what they think they wanted at the beginning changes. But what doesn't change, particularly when you're talking about C-suite, I see that more related to John's earlier question happening at the executive level, that their sense of the experience and the kind of candidate they want kind of evolves as the interview process evolves, because they tend to talk to more candidates. But generally at the C-suite, they're very clear about what they want. And they can articulate it pretty well, because in most cases, organizations, when they have a change at that point, it's not a surprise. You know, there's a retirement or there's a succession plan in place. So we have been having conversations for 3 to 6 months. So that helps to minimize those changes that are happening as they're interviewing candidates. So that's another difference, I think, when you're targeting C-suite. You know, you either know we have an internal person that we're going to promote into that role, or if we're going outside, we're starting well in advance. So there can be some handoff time, you know, that we can assimilate and transition the leader into that role. Because you want to minimize the risk. You know, that person is going to have influence over a number of people, key initiatives, and performance really fast is critical.
When do you know that you have the wrong person? Like, let's say you've hired someone that's like, you know what, this is just not working. And what are some of the telltale signs?
You know, John, fortunately, I don't have experience there. We were
You're
very
so good.
Successful. You're so
best answer ever.
You know, I think at the C-suite, it's a fit. That's my, you know, what I hear from my colleagues. But again, it's not about experience. It's do they relate to each other? It's that, I know this sounds rudimentary, but are they clicking?
Yeah, it's the rapport.
The rapport, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we're talking to some of the listeners out there that are up and coming C-suiteers, they want to get to that position, they want to get to that place, but they're not there yet. What kind of suggestions do you have for them to work themselves into a place where they could actually get there?
Sure. I think at that level, it's who you travel with. Because I think what happens, it's a lot of informal dialogue. Like, as I mentioned, you know, there's succession planning. They're anticipating those changes. So leaders start talking to each other. You know, I'm going to need a new CMO. Who do you know that's out there? So it's really important to manage your network and be out on boards or interacting with people. I think that's really important, because it's a lot of that informal dialogue that happens. It's not as a formal interview recruiting process that happens at other levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not so much send me your resume and let's see what
it's
you got.
It's really who you travel with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it normally recruited into those levels in the inside the company or outside, from your experience and knowing the business?
Yeah, it really depends on where your business is. So Cox, for the first time, we had more coming from the outside into the C-suite than we've ever had in the past, because our business changed. We had a new operating model, different competitors, and we really said we need different experience coming in. And that was important. So I think at that level, you kind of define your approach. If you're going to, you know, if you're going to promote someone from within, our COO, we promoted when the former COO retired. But other key positions, newly created positions, we had a brand new EVP of strategy. We didn't have that expertise in-house. We had to go. We knew we had to go out for that.
Mm-hmm. When you were building into the role that you've had and, mm-hmm. and the experience that you've been able to garnish, when did you know that you really had a knack for this? And what mm-hmm. do you think is the characteristic or talent mm-hmm. that you have that makes you well-suited for mm-hmm. this type of a role?
Well, I love people, and I want to help people be successful. And so it's just spending time with people, getting to know them, and understanding what their values and purposes in their careers. You know, I think that I just love doing that and helping them excel by finding the right place. Because for me, the greatest reward is finding that fit, getting someone, they understand what their passion is, and there's a role that it just all comes together. And it doesn't happen all the time. You know, it all doesn't come together at the same time. But when it does, it's really rewarding.
It almost seems like the fit is, certainly there's a business fit, but how much of it is on the personal side of things? How important is it for those people to gel on a personal side?
I think that depends on the leader. You know, I really do. That's why you have to have that ability to gauge that. How important is how much time we spend having lunch or having personal conversation? You really have to have that intuition, that antenna about mm-hmm. this is important to this person as I work with them. And I think that's very important as you move up in organizations to have self-awareness. Really important.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about filling the role, mm-hmm. But one of the things that you talked about earlier is the strategy of it, of envisioning what do you want that mm-hmm. team to look like and what do you want it to
yeah.
do. And tell mm-hmm. us more about how you work with C-level execs and executive teams to build that.
Yeah. So it is sitting, understanding what the strategy is, how it might be changing. And, you know, this kind of relates to what I think is a really important leadership capability as you move up in organizations, and it's anticipating the future. So our conversations will be about, not so much about today, but what about tomorrow? And so when I am talking to leaders, particularly when they're going to go into a senior executive position, how do they demonstrate that ability to envision the future? And it really comes from, I don't want folks to think I'm a huge sports fan, but I do read Sports Illustrated so I can talk to my boys at home at the dinner table. And my favorite quote is one by Wayne Gretzky, and he said, good hockey players are where the puck is, but great hockey players are where the puck's going to be.
Right.
And I think that helping, you know, the best consultant or resource is someone who is where the puck is going to be. And I think that I learned how to do that. So this is where you are today, but where do you want to be 3 years from now? And then do you have the right people to get you there and asking those questions? Or how effective is your team today? And what kind of support might your team need? What kind of skill do you need to add to your team to get you there? I think that's really important.
So I'm going to turn the tables a little bit on you.
Sure.
5 to 10 years from now, where do you want to be personally and professionally? What do mm-hmm. you want to be doing?
I think my sweet spot is talent, being a talent strategist. And I would love to be helping an organization that's making a difference in the world globally, has a global footprint, and helping them with their talent management strategy and ensuring that they have the right people in key jobs to be effective. So that's my ideal job.
That's what you want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I've always been grounded in having a purposeful career. It's important to love what you do and be working with people that you want to work with and be in a place where you want to be. And it's, I think what I have learned as I've matured in my career is that first one is so important. Love what you do. And I love helping organizations and people align. And so, because that, if you love what you do, people know it. And then the other two things kind of take care of themselves. So,
what advice would you give to people that are going through transitions and looking for those higher level positions? Mm-hmm. What kind of things do they need to be aware of? And what kind of things do they need to make sure that they're doing, not just to land the job, but also to make sure they're taking care of themselves from a financial, from a personal standpoint?
That's a great question, John. And the first thing, you know, a lot of times when people are in transition, they think they should just canvas everything. And I think it's really important, the clearer you are about what you love and what your passion is, then people can pick up on that and it's easier for them to help you. So my best advice is to know what you love and don't get sidetracked or distracted by, you know, a potential opportunity that isn't going to be fulfilling. It will happen. And I think that's really important to just really be clear about what you love, how you want to make a difference, and stay on that path. That's been the best advice that's been given to me and what I share with other people. So,
you grew up in your previous organization 22 years.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a run.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of a blunt question. How did you make it that long, right? I mean, 22 years nowadays is you don't hear it that you don't hear about that.
Well, a lot of things I've mentioned this morning, and also just being flexible, looking for opportunities. I feel like, you know, the company morphed. So I feel like I worked for three companies over that 22 years because it changed and got into new businesses over the course of that, and I had opportunities to grow and develop in that period. So I think just being flexible, looking for opportunities to add value in the organization, and it was a great opportunity working with great people and great leaders. So
Good stuff. So last question I've got for you, which is your pearl of wisdom. What would you leave our listeners with as a pearl of wisdom?
You know, I just read Steve Jobs' book. He's such an interesting leader. And I think his quote, I might not get it right, but it was something about stay curious, or I think he did a speech at Stanford or something, and it was about, you know, just being curious all the time. I think that's really important for leaders, is that you're constantly learning. I shared with you earlier that I just got my MBA.
Yeah, and congratulations,
think,
by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And my greatest learning was that I still have brain cells at this point in my life. It was great fun. But I think that's important, you know, just to keep learning. And that's my best advice for this morning.
And then your boys couldn't really, they got nothing on you if you're out there getting your master's. They got nothing.
No, they're trying to catch up. Yeah, we were. That was. I felt like I was inspiring my kids at home. Yes, you're right.
So
thank
win-win.
You. Yes,
a win-win.
Well,
if anybody wants to reach out to you, is there a good way to get in contact?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah.
All right.
I'm LinkedIn. Yes, that would be great.
All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us. Can you hang
sure.
out for a minute?
Sure.
All right. So our next guest is Harris Troutman, and Harris is former general counsel for Vitru. And Harris, I want to welcome you in today.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So maybe you could give us a little bit of background on what you've been doing and kind of how you got to where you are now.
I've got a fairly broad legal background. I actually started my career as a litigator years ago. And then with the technology boom, transitioned into technology and corporate transactional law, advising management with the technology startup here in Atlanta, and sort of stayed with that path and doing transactional work and corporate work, both as a partner in a firm here in Atlanta and as well with two technology startups here in Atlanta.
And just by that experience, it seems like you've gotten some experience in the whole mergers and acquisition realm.
Yeah, so you know, there's always things at play in technology. So people are always looking for opportunities to combine companies, to look for stronger synergies and to make those moves. And I've advised management on both acquiring and being the acquired company.
So you kind of get them to that point, and then bring in some other individuals to make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
Eh? Sure, you know, the process sort of starts with an expression of interest by somebody. Either we'd like to join you, or we'd like you to join us. And usually they go, if that there's some mutual interest there, they go to sort of a non-disclosure phase. And then if there's a little bit of diligence and sort of a letter of intent, and when we start getting up to the true due diligence and the negotiation of a definitive agreement, that's when we'll bring in the outside counsel who will negotiate the actual transaction document. But yeah, there's a lot of bumps along the way, a lot of risk to be assessed, and business issues to be thought through as you go through that process. And that's sort of where my role comes in.
Have you seen much change on the mergers and acquisitions front over the last 5 years?
You know, my entry in has been sporadic, so I can't really identify any particular trends other than, you know, what I've noticed is that each deal has its own sort of set of circumstances. Each deal takes on its own pace, and there are the business reasons for making that deal, and no two set of circumstances are exactly alike. What's important to two players in the same industry may be completely different for two other players in the same industry who decide that they want to come together.
And the general counsel piece, most of what you've done is in-house general counsel, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Okay. Help us understand a little bit more from a corporate standpoint. What are the benefits to a corporation of having that in-house general counsel versus just resourcing it out?
Well, I think that there's a return on the investment in that you've got somebody down the hall who can help you assess risk and also help you sort of forecast what's important. You know, there are a lot of instances where the guys who are running the day-to-day business may not see something down the road that my experience may provide some insight into, as well as being able to efficiently manage the outside counsel, being able to keep the work going. I mean, the legal plays a large role in a lot of companies, but you don't want it to be an impediment. It's important to be able to, for the in-house person, to be able to keep deals flowing by doing some of the work or having some of the work in-house and knowing what needs to go outside efficiently to keep the business going, keep the business moving.
Well, Harris, can you expand on that a little bit? I mean, so Aaron had mentioned, you know, the Gretzky quote about knowing where the puck is going to be versus where it is. And I think oftentimes when we think about legal services, we think about not only where the puck is, but maybe where the puck was.
Right.
and we're kind of dealing after the fact. But what are some of the things you do to really anticipate where the puck's going to be and lead a company versus just cleaning up after?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's when you're in-house, you really get vested in knowing what your business, your company's in. When you're outside counsel, you may have a number of clients. So you go across the board. You've got this client in this area and this client in that area. But when you're inside, you're fully vested in where your company is and where they're going and what their strategy is going to be. And so you've got a particular insight you can share with the management team based on your experience as a lawyer. To help them more efficiently and quickly get there and hopefully dodge some of the landmines that may be hidden along the way.
Clearly, you have to work closely with executive teams, kind of like we talked to Aaron earlier about kind of creating those executive teams. Is there anything in particular that you have found helpful in understanding what those executives and that executive team really need to look out for, or is it just more intuition?
You know, I think that she hit on some things about having a cohesive management unit. I mean, you've got to have a fit with the management team and understand what their perspective is and what's important to them and what the organization believes is important to it, so that you can factor that into your analysis. There's some intuition there. I mean, I think there's intuition involved in everybody's role at the senior level management, but. Being vested in where they're going, where they want to be, and how they anticipate getting there is really the most important part.
Is there a certain size that a company really should hit or get to before they bring somebody in-house?
I think it varies on the industry. Whether if it's a highly regulated company, if they do a lot of high volume of transactions, some industries, there's typically a lot of negotiation and transaction. Other industries, that's not the norm. So it's really hard to say. I think that the CEO and the CEO have to sit down and figure out whether they believe that they can truly take advantage of that resource on their team in the within the organization and within the industry that they're operating in.
Well, let me go back to the M&A work that you've been doing or exposed to it all, at least. What are some of the things, maybe two, three things that companies and management teams really should be looking out for if they're getting involved in a mergers and acquisition? And let's first think about the company that's being acquired. If you were counsel on that company being acquired, what are some of the things that they really need to be aware of?
I think that it's sort of having your ducks in a row from an intellectual property perspective. As well as your financial records and the story that goes along with how you've gotten to where you are and how you expect to get to the projections that you have. Those are probably two key areas, but the intellectual property being very important from an asset perspective, particularly in the technology industry.
What about the after the sale, the merger of those two entities? What have you found that's been successful and other things that really have hurt?
Well, you know, I think when two companies come together, the acquiring company has plans as far as the transition goes, and I think planning on their part is important. You know, the typically there's been discussions about the cultures of the companies beforehand, and so there seems to be a compatible culture, or they've thought through a path to bring in to assimilate the culture, or to so that there's not a clash afterward. You know, that's in general, that's sort of what I've observed, that anecdotally what I've heard from others, and that you know, culture seems to be a big player, and you know, being able to, because these folks have thought through the business side of it, right? I mean, you can look at the pen and put pen to paper and look at the numbers and see how 1 + 1 hopefully equals 3,
right?
Mm-hmm. But the real key is making sure that when you put 1 + 1 together, that they don't reject each other, that they actually add up.
And I'll just add, there's a people component to that when you talk about culture. And I think the best organizations, when they're looking at mergers and acquisitions, are also talking about the talent so that they retain the best talent. Because the first thing that happens as soon as people get wind of a merger or acquisition is, I better start looking. And your best people are looking. And so one of the successes we had is early in that process, sitting down with the leadership teams and talking about the people that we want to ensure that we retain through the process and potentially long term. That was really important. And I think that helps you get to the exponential value of that organization.
Well, and that piggybacks on my next question, which is, how do you personally prepare for that transition? I mean, if you are the employee and you're going, okay, this is happening, what do you need to do to get yourself situated so that you're taken care of?
Right. Well, that may be a better question for our HR professional than me, unfortunately.
You're protecting the company, right?
But, you know, I think that most people are there's the management tries when you get to the point where the acquisition or the mergers becomes public knowledge within the company. You know, I think it's important and I'm sure, you know, our other guests will echo this, is that you start to set the expectations of the company of how this is the idea is to make this good for everyone. And that's, you know, I've seen companies do a very good job at that, and their HR professionals helping coach through that and being there and available to talk to folks and help them understand how this is beneficial for everyone, and the goal is to make it beneficial for everyone.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit and something you mentioned off air, which was working with a football and cheerleading group up in Roswell. And that being a passion of yours, you're actually on the board working with that, right?
Yes.
Any correlations between the kinds of things that you have to deal with on a board there versus a board within a corporate environment?
No, this is just an opportunity to give back to the community. My sons play, and just an opportunity to spend some time with some of the other parents that I see on Saturdays and help build the organization, because it's a good program and the kids have a lot of fun. But you know, somebody's you've got it takes a little attention to keep it going and keep it positive, and so it's just a pastime.
Well, I like how you make that sound kind of easy, and oh, it's just like kids getting together and play ball. But my child's been through Little League, and I've been to a lot of children's sporting events, and it's more cutthroat and serious business than some corporations. I mean, parents take it seriously. These are their kids out there. There's a lot of pride and prejudice and whatever going on, right? I mean, it's got to be a little like herding cats sometimes.
Well, you know, look, up in Roswell, we take our football seriously. But you know, at this age, this is second through like sixth grade. So, you know, I don't think anybody's quite planning their NFL careers yet.
Well, the parents are.
The parents are. That's my point, yeah. Parents take it real seriously.
I've definitely seen some behavior that was not was certainly not something they might encourage their kids to have. But that's great. Thanks for that work, because you're benefiting my kids directly. We're up in Roswell also, so we've had kids in the football program. It's a great program.
Well, I'm the sponsorship guy on the board. So, you know, anybody out there that would like to sponsor the Roswell Youth
there
Volunteer
you
Association.
There you go. Always looking for, that's a good pitch. That's nice. I like the way you got that in there. Well, just wrapping things up, any pearl of wisdom for our listeners?
You know, I hate to borrow a line from a movie, but I think in the M&A world, it's sort of plan to be surprised. You know, no two transactions are the same, and I think if you sat down and you try to sit down and map everything out and be prepared, but there's always going to be something unexpected that comes up, and then everybody's got the right end goal in mind, right? And one of the fun things about doing transactional work is that you're helping people accomplish business. Everybody wants to do the deal. And so there's going to be surprises along the way, and sometimes they're going to be difficult to deal with. But the idea of reaching that end goal, that's what makes it fun.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to spend with us this morning. We certainly appreciate it. If somebody wants to get in contact, is there a good way to reach out to you?
I'm on LinkedIn as well. That's probably the best way.
All right. So LinkedIn is the new way to contact with people. Perfect. Well, thank you both for sharing your time with us and your knowledge in your particular fields. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
To our listeners, we certainly appreciate you spending your time this morning. And until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.